Fellow auto detailers, welcome to the show that features interviews with today's most successful auto detailers. This is the Auto Detailing Podcast. Here's your host, Jimbo Balaam.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to this episode of the Auto Detailing Podcast. This was a highly requested episode, and I'm always so happy to get your requests of people that you think should be on the show. And I really do try to follow up on every single one of those leads and people and get them on the show. Today is a gentleman by the name of Scott in Dallas Paint Correction. I giggle a little bit because he has consistently been one of the people that Andy Varney, what's up, Andy? Thank you for sending Scott my way. Big shout out to you. Love interacting with you on Facebook and stuff. So Andy is a big fan and proponent for Scott and Dallas Paint Correction, always sending me the videos, asking my thoughts and opinions and stuff. And so I thought, you know what, I should have this guy on the show. So I did, and that is this episode. And it sounds like and feels like this is just going to be the start of another awesome relationship, which is what, contrary to what we see sometimes in the Facebook groups and the forums or whatever, our industry is awesome, and it's made up of awesome people. The detailing industry is seriously made up of a bunch of awesome people, especially when you get them off the internet. So Scott is no different. We had a nice chat before we started recording and a little bit after we started recording, or after we recorded. And I think he fits the bill for that as well. And so I'm excited to have yet another person to interact with in our industry. So, guys, I would highly encourage you, kind of like when I talked about, you know, going to Mobile Tech and these different shows and events where you can actually interact with people face-to-face. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm, like, the biggest proponent of the internet in the history of the internet. Like, I love the internet. I love what it can do for people. I love what it can do for your business. I love the information it provides. So I'm not going to ever going to get on a soapbox and be like, you need to get off the internet. I think you need to be on the internet more. But what I have found is that when you can really, I think what getting face to face with people offers is a deeper connection, a deeper level of connection. And also when you're talking with someone, you can hear their tone, and sometimes tone is hard to pick up on when it's just black and white keys. So I'm not going to sit here and be like, I think the internet's ruining us. I think it's making us more connected and better. Because even look at this, I would have never known Scott. I would have never had the pleasure to have such a good conversation with him if it wasn't for the internet. So I'm forever grateful for that. But I do think when we could have deeper conversations, face-to-face voice conversations, the real truth of our industry comes out, and it's actually comprised of just a bunch of awesome people, and I feel super fortunate to be a part of that. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode with Scott and myself, and like I said, we're definitely going to have him back on again. So here we go. All right, everyone, welcome to episode 324 of the Auto Detailing Podcast. I'm super, super excited to have today's guest on, and he was brought on by popular demand, by you, the listener, reaching out and saying, hey, what about this guy? And as we talked before we hit record, it's been multiple times. So I reached out to him on Monday. We're recording this on a Thursday, so relatively quickly, and I'm appreciative to that. So without further ado, welcome you, Scott, with Dallas Paint Correction, to the podcast.
Hey, Jimbo, thank you so much. I appreciate it. I was grateful that you reached out to me. And before we start, I do watch your podcast. I think they're amazing. Watch your videos. So I honor what you're doing, and I'm grateful to be here, so let's have a little bit of fun.
Yeah, it should be fun, and I'm excited. I've watched some of your videos. I've learned a lot, actually, from the few. I'm not a huge YouTube guy. I'm trying to get more into it because I know it's important. So, but I've actually, the few videos that I have watched of yours, I appreciate your candidness, your honesty, and I love aligning myself with people that, you know, that's why I started the podcast. Was I felt there was so much fluff and so much BS in this industry that I'd that had been mine for, you know, 6 or 8 years that I'm like, you know what? So much crap going on. I want some honesty and some truth. So I felt like you offered that as well. And I love aligning with people like that. So where did it all start for you? How did you get into, first of all, where, obviously Dallas Pain Correction, you're in Dallas, I'm assuming, Dallas, Texas.
Yes.
But where did it all start detailing wise for you?
Well, you're talking all the way back. My family, to go even further back than that, my family's been in the automotive industry for, oh God, they've been in it since the 1950s. They were in auto electric, general repair. They were into powder coating well before it was really, really popular. And I think I kind of came out of the womb, you know, I was holding a wrench and I was holding a bucket of car soap. So it was kind of predestined, I think, for me to kind of be in the automotive industry. I didn't necessarily follow my family as far as the things they were doing in the automotive industry, loved cars. I also have a huge passion, this is going to sound really crazy, for chemicals. I don't know why. I love the way they work. I love the way they respond. Since I was a child, my mother used to say to me all the time, or she says to me now as I'm an adult, she said, Scott, every time you would like, there was a cleaner in the home, you wanted to open up the bottle, you wanted to smell it, you wanted to know how it worked, and you would try it on multiple different things, even if it wasn't for it. And I look back at that now and I go, yeah, that's kind of the way my mind works. It's like, the biggest thing for me is overall cleanliness is really important. Detailing, have a high critical eye. I think that was all there as a young kid, and it just made sense since my family was in the automotive industry. I would go this route, and that's how it started. I mean, we're talking 27 years ago.
Wow. Okay. And so you've always, from that point, I guess, 27 years ago, you've been kind of around detailing cars?
Not always, not okay. Full time. There's been moments where I've been in and out of it. And I would say, you know, for a great deal of my career, I was full time in it, but not always.
Okay. And are you currently still full time or currently full time?
Yeah. Okay. You know what? I'm really grateful that my schedule is pretty flexible. I have some really great clients that allow me to have a flexible schedule. I do a lot of maintenance detailing. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of paint correction. I do some, you know, some kind of out-of-the-box kind of stuff when it comes to detailing. So I'm not necessarily working every day.
Sure.
And that really is by choice at this point, you know?
Right, right. What are some of those oddball things that you do that kind of pertain to detailing but not really?
Oh, I think, you know, stuff from removing window tint, debadging vehicles, removing vinyl graphics. Just the other day, I had a client who called me up and said, I got a little Mini Cooper and I can't stand the British flag that's on top of this thing.
Oh, wow.
What was really challenging, it was challenging to, the challenging part wasn't getting it off, but I have never been asked to put one back on.
Oh.
And that was really, you know, you're talking about a rather large surface, a rather large hood.
It's a pretty
so
big
here
hood.
Here I
yeah.
was in the moment. And I was the guy in the moment going, yeah, I can get it off. And then all of a sudden they said, can you put a new one on? Now, of course, you don't want to lose the potential of making some money. And I'm sitting there going, okay, this is the moment for me now to kind of go, all right, I'm out of my comfort zone. Can I do this? And I find when I do those things, you really, really get some huge growth, expansion. And all of a sudden, the door started to open. I said, wait a minute, there's a lot of people who want to put some form of vinyl graphics on the vehicle. I've been taking them off for years. What about that as far as a market? And so the doors open as you go. So it's been kind of interesting. But that's some things that I do, debadging vehicles, removing window tint. I mean, a lot of us detailers are doing headlight restoration and all that stuff. So that's pretty mainstream there as well.
I love those kind of odds and end jobs. Or I'm struggling to find the right word to describe that kind of type of work, but I feel like that stuff, I love doing it because it breaks up kind of the monotony of detailing, right? If you do maintenance detailing, I used to do office buildings and a slew of like just fleet washes and stuff like that. And that stuff for me can get real monotonous. And that's kind of where podcasting and radio and all that kind of came in for me to keep my mind occupied. But I realized with those kind of different services that could really break up that monotony that sometimes can come with detailing.
Yeah, and as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to be 45 in April. I'm an April Fool's baby, by the way.
Oh, my grandma, too.
I think. Oh, great. Awesome. Hi, Grandma. How are you? I think as I get older, the big perspective is, do I want to be vacuuming the inside of a small sports car at the age of 45, 6'1", 200 pounds?
Right.
The answer is no. I'm tired of this stuff. I don't want to be doing this anymore. And my objective is to get into the driveway, do what I have to do because I'm mobile, and I want out, and I want maximum profits. That doesn't mean I cut any corners to be able to do so.
Right.
But I find these a lot of these niche jobs, when you're talking about removing emblems, on Sunday I have a job where this guy's got this Texas edition. He wants of a 2016 Chevy Silverado. He's got the Texas edition badges, wants those off. He wants the chrome strips off the door. He wants the bow tie emblems. Guess what? That's like a 2-hour job for me to remove the emblems, the double-sided tape, the glue, the adhesive, doing a little bit of polishing. But the profit margins are so high that I look at myself and go, man, I could have made the same amount of money, but I would have been in a guy's driveway for 4 hours vacuuming, and I hate it.
my image, similar to yours, like vacuuming, but mine is always, I don't know why, it's always around the rim. And I always said, like, man, this is, because I started detailing at 19, and the longer I did it, the more I said, you know, I don't want to be 60 years old and cleaning a rim. Cleaning a dirty rim because I have to. And that was the thing, right? Like, I don't want to do it because I have to. I like it. I enjoy it. Right. But I don't want to have to do it. And it sounds like you kind of share that same philosophy.
Absolutely.
So does YouTube and starting to do videos, because I'm looking at your oldest video, and I just assumed that you'd been doing it for longer, but it looks like your oldest video is 11 months old. So that's, you're at 29,664 subscribers in 11 months. Pretty good feat, I would say. So did kind of the idea behind putting videos up on YouTube kind of align with that, you know, I don't want to be vacuuming a small car when I'm, you know, 100 years old? Or where did YouTube kind of come into the, did you see a little white space that needed to be hit? Where did that come along?
Boy, how do I say this without sounding obnoxious? One,
and you could sound one, obnoxious. That's cool. It's your story. Do as you please.
I looked at YouTube as a way, one, to kind of promote myself a little bit. That was fine within the Dallas area. Two, I wanted to give back. I wanted to help people. I definitely feel I have a totally different perspective in a lot of different areas in detailing. And I said, you know what? Let me throw it out there. Maybe somebody will appreciate it. But Jimbo, I had no idea. After, I think March 3rd, we're talking, what, a week and a half away, yep. I will be on YouTube for one year.
Okay.
I sit there and I look at this and I say to myself, I was expecting, maybe I'll get 2,000 subscribers in a year's time. It really didn't work out that way. I'm overwhelmed by it. The other thing is that one thing, you know, I do promote myself in the Dallas area. It has brought me some business, and sometimes it helps me and it hurts me because I'm busy to begin with, and there's people like, Scott, we want you to do it. Well, boy, I'm a couple of weeks out, and sometimes that can be a little bit difficult. But one of the things I won't do, and I think this drives some of my subscribers nuts, I'll talk about something, and they'll go, why don't you provide links? And I have a philosophy about this. As far as I'm concerned, I want to be transparent. I am not married or loyal to any of these products that I use, whether I like them or I don't. I'm not interested in making money per se off the viewer. That's not really my style, but I have been blown away, Jimbo, of the revenue from the views.
So I want to say, what does that look like? You know, but I don't want to get too personal if you don't want to share. But like, has it been substantial, significant? Obviously, it's more significant than you thought.
It's more than some people make a month.
Got it. Okay, just from the views only. Yeah. So, and you have, I'm assuming, ads running, and I have YouTube Red, so I don't always see the.
Yes.
So you have ads running in front of the videos, and that's where you're getting ad revenue from. That's what you're speaking to?
Yeah, and you also have to understand something else about YouTube, which is very interesting. You have to, the more links you actually add below your videos actually hurts your revenue potential.
Interesting. Okay.
The reason for that is if you really do research with YouTube, the more links you have below your videos, the more you look like a marketer and not a YouTube creator.
Interesting. So do you
think what that translates? I'm sorry.
But no.
What that translates to, is you've got multiple big companies that want to advertise on YouTube. They will tell YouTube behind the closed doors, behind the veil, and say, "We don't want to attach ourselves to people who do 20 links below their videos." So if you really do the research with this stuff, the more transparent, the more honest you are, not providing links, looking like a marketer, you'll find that the bigger advertisers who are willing to pay more money per view will attach themselves to your channel.
Interesting. So it sounds like you know what you're talking about is in regards to, like, I guess it would be YouTube SEO. So did you have that philosophy from the very beginning, or did you start putting videos up and then you're like, oh, I want to see, you know, what happens, and you kind of just did it on accident with not putting links and then went back through it and figured it out?
A great question. Totally by mistake. I actually had, this is going to sound crazy, I guess this sometimes I can be a little controversial on certain products. So there were some, I don't know who they were, but there were some that contested some of the things I was saying. YouTube actually assigned a woman who I've known since about the last 7 months, where they started to have to review my videos. And they said, well, wait a minute, the guy's not swearing. He has an opinion. What's going on here? Why are these people kind of saying, hey, can you check this channel out? Maybe you need to demonetize this video. I spent time with this woman on the phone. I was incredibly grateful with her. And she said, Scott, one of the things I love about your channel, I don't know what the heck you're talking about, but you're not marketing anything. And she says, I want to give you some heads up. That's actually very powerful on YouTube, because some of the biggest advertisers who pay the most are more interested to work with people who don't look like marketers.
Interesting. And that's something okay. Wow. Very interesting. So it's accidentally worked in your favor. Isn't that interesting how sometimes that works out? I like that. And what do you think? So I kind of want to leapfrog backwards into chemicals and why they fascinate you and stuff like that. But what are some of the most, what are some of the, your favorite, either, let's start there. What are some of your favorite products, or is that always changing?
There's certainly a foundation to the stuff that I use, but there are times where I will venture out. I'll try different products. I don't necessarily stay within the traditional professional auto detailing line of products. I'll venture out. There's been a couple products I found over the last year or so that I'm very, very impressed with. But I would say there's one product that will never leave the fold, and that is Meguiar's wheel brightener. As far as,
really,
you know, whether I'm maintaining a vehicle once a week or once every 30 days, or it's a one-time client, that product to be able to dissolve and break down brake dust and rinse relatively fast and without any type of foaming agent to it, it is a winner in my world. I'm not naive to the fact that it's acid-based.
Sure.
That scares people. This is not fun stuff to be around. There's issues there as far as,
I'm a huge fan of the chemical. I'm a huge fan of acid, by the way. So that I know.
Yeah, let's just get to the punch, right?
I agree with everything that you're saying. You know, but I love hydrofluoric acid because it works. You know, and I think, and not to cut you off and take you off subject, because I don't think it is, but, you know, as we see all these iron removers come in, I just think, you know, for $20 for a 16-ounce bottle, I could get a gallon of hydrofluoric acid, or I don't even know how much a gallon of wheel brightener is, but I don't think it's very much, you know. You could get a gallon of something that actually works better without all the frills and color-changing, you know, magic, but it works better. You know, it's crazy.
Well, here's the As pro detailers, time is money, but I also have the philosophy that I'm also getting paid for my time. I don't cut myself short. I'm probably one of the higher detailers here in Dallas, and people go, how do you get people to pay that price? But, you know, we can talk about that if we want or not, but that's a totally different story. But here's the deal. If I use a product like Iron X, I don't want to throw any particular one company under the bus, but these color-changing chemicals, the issue with it from a pro's perspective, do I have 3 to 5 minutes right. for this stuff to sit there, 100%. Dwell, break down the brake dust? The other thing is that these products, I'm sorry, they're not the best grease and grime and traffic film removing type of cleaners right. as well. Right. It can break down the brake dust just fine. But then you find yourself going, but it doesn't really clean the rim, and I need another product to clean the rim. Mm-hmm. The other issue, too, is I'm not going to mention the company, but these color-changing chemicals, if you were working, there was one particular company, the product that I used, and it got a little scary. My customer had a asphalt driveway, and he had it recently sealed. Ooh. I used some of these color-changing wheel cleaners. It dripped onto the new sealant that was on the asphalt driveway. Jimbo, it ate through it. Now I've got to look at my customer and go, hey, it's supposed to be pH neutral. It's supposed to make my life easy.
Right.
No, it didn't. So that's where, you know, people say, well, I don't like the hydrofluoric acid. I don't like these acid-based wheel cleaners. Listen, I don't blame you. Wear gloves. Wear three
right.
masks.
Yeah, they're nasty. Totally. 100%. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But some of these other products, just because they say they're pH neutral, you have to remember, too, the pH rating will change depending on what surface the chemical is being sprayed on. And if you think something that has the ability to be able to, you know, the way these color changing products work, or these cleaners work, is they're rapidly accelerating the process of oxidation. So you can remove or dissolve metals with acid. You can do it with heat, a blowtorch. You've seen guys cut steel, but we're talking very small particles within that rim, and these color-changing wheel cleaners, that's exactly what they're doing. They're rapidly accelerating the process of oxidation to be able to dissolve that metal. There is some concern there depending on the other parts of the braking system that you're spraying that upon. So sometimes we have to see the big picture. We're beating up one product and going, I got to go this direction. I don't think there's one particular product that I can look at my customer and go, you know what? You can drink this stuff. It's completely safe. You can pour it on your kid's head and it will remove the brake dust. We're talking about some nasty material we're trying to get off the rim.
Right. You are speaking my language. So, and what's interesting though is I don't care for Meguiar's wheel brightener only because I don't feel like it works. It's not strong enough sometimes, you know. But it is
really
On like a, I mean, I'll use generic terms, but like on a really heavily pitted chrome rim, that's just a mess.
Right.
It's not strong enough for me.
Okay.
So, but. Whatever.
Are you using hydrofluoric acid straight?
I would be lying if I said I never did that. But usually I cut it, you know, like a heavy,
right.
only because it is, like you said, it is really nasty to work with. And that was one thing, that was a mistake I made early on in podcasting. I would talk about it and not, because it was so normal for me to use.
Sure.
I didn't talk about all the precautions that should be taken, you know, and then I had to think back about the first time I used it and got it in my mouth and thought I was going to die. Not because anything happened, just because I got scared, you know, but, usually depending on how bad the rim is, I'm usually cutting it. You know, if I cut it 50-50, that's a pretty strong dilution. So it's usually, you know, 25% acid, you know, the rest water.
Sure.
And that usually seems to do the trick. But it's man, nothing shines a rim like some acid, in my opinion.
No, it's amazing on how it will do it. I mean, you literally step back and go, wow, that's brilliant. It, you know, Meguiar's wheel brightener, it really does brighten it. You know, this hydrofluoric acid stuff will brighten certain types of metals, but you look back and go, I will not get that with Iron X. I will not get 100%. That with Adam's wheel cleaner. It, you know, it's amazing what it can do. But there are, listen, I make videos and I tell people how to use a product or how I use it. And then I'll get all these comments and it will be like, really, like, oh man, I guess I have to explain to the bitter end. People are like, can I use it on my dog? And I'm like, are you kidding?
Like, no.
But I feel like sometimes if you don't go all the way down that rabbit hole, like you don't go through the whole checklist with people, you have to be careful what you say on YouTube, because some people can take it, use the product wrong, and the next thing, you're the biggest idiot on the planet.
Right. What is one product as of a recent time that is kind of surprised you?
Surprised me in a good way or a bad way?
Let's do both. Let's start with the good first. Yeah.
Well, that I've just recently come into contact with, or that's been in my fold for a long time that I just absolutely love, and perhaps not a lot of people know about it.
Let's do both.
Okay. Well, there's a product called Citral 266. This is a organically acid-based type of cleaner, and it's oil-based as well. Like if you dipped your finger in it, it would be kind of slimy feeling. I've made multiple videos about this product, and it's the one product when I go to bed at night, I go, thank you that you're in my truck. You're always in my arsenal. The Citral 266, to me, to be able to remove tar, tough water spots and deposits, nasty bugs. It's just one of those products that I use. I also use it when I'm getting smoke smells out of people's cars. This thing's exceptional. You want to talk about off-label use for that product. It works really well for that. That's one product there. I just used it this morning. I had a guy that had this Jeep, what do they call it, Jeep Rubicons?
Yep.
And he had this military paint style. It wasn't matte finishes. Like if you dragged your hand across it, it felt like sandpaper.
Okay.
He had hit white road paint. And now you've got this this textured surface all over this Jeep.
Would it almost be like a bedliner material? Like it was a bedliner material?
Yes, okay, yes, got it. Yeah. Okay. Oh, absolutely. And I guess the military uses this type of paint style for multiple different applications because it's really easy to clean. You walk up to it with a pressure washer and you just blow the crap out of it, and it kind of releases everything out of its pore and it's fine.
Okay.
But the fact that this was so porous, this material, I was trying to steam some of this white paint out of there, try to get a degreaser in there. I used rapid remover. All I had to do was take Citral 266 on a microfiber, just let it sit on that white paint for about 15 to 20 seconds, hit it with steam, and it disappeared.
Wow.
All the other products I was trying to use, because I was slightly concerned. I don't really understand that paint system all that well. I'm like, wait a minute, this is pretty aggressive. It removes adhesives like nobody's business. I was a little concerned with it, and then I did some test in a inconspicuous area, and it responded well. And I look at this little jar, this jug that I paid for $39, and I feel like I want to go to bed with it and curl up and go, thank you that you're always with me.
Wow. Okay. I've never even heard of that product. What is the normal? So it's just a cleaner and degreaser. But is there an industry that it's like? How did you find it?
Well, by mistake, I found this. I walked into a local Napa, and I wanted something to remove road paint from inside of a wheel well, and there was an older gentleman sitting on a chair. Jimbo, this is the moments that you really have to pay attention. So I was telling the guy behind the counter, I had tried everything to get this road paint off the textured wheel well area. And this little older gentleman, I can still see him today in my head, in my eyes. It's an 80-year-old guy sitting there with his little Italian Mario type of hat. He looks at me and he goes, have you ever heard of Citral 266? Now, part of me being the cocky guy I was at the time, I'm like looking at this guy going, why are you even listening to my conversation? You can't help me.
Right.
But why are you eavesdropping
on me?
Yeah, what is he doing? He's 80 years old. He's getting ready to leave the planet.
Right,
what could he possibly know? Yeah. So he tells me about Citral 266, and I wish I could. If I had a time machine, I'd go back and kiss the man right in front of everybody in Napa.
Oh, my gosh. So did they carry it, or did you have to go online and get it then?
No, this particular Napa did carry it. The company is actually Schaefer's that owns the chemical Citral 266. They're in St. Louis. They've been in It's really geared towards a really aggressive type of degreaser. You can use it for multiple different applications. And I just found it to kind of eat through road tar. Now, there's some people out there that say, hey, Scott, can the, you know, I wouldn't necessarily want to wash a car with it. You got to, you know, you got to have some residue control, common sense here. When you use this stuff, just flush it off the panel or hit it with a spray wax, wherever you used it, and just neutralize the chemical. It is clear coat safe. The issue is that Citroen or our Schaefer's always wanted to make sure if you did use it on clear coat, just make sure you flush it off the area or neutralize it. Once you do that, it's completely safe.
Got it. So that's a product that's your favorite that's been in the arsenal that surprised you but has stayed in the arsenal, correct?
It's not going anywhere.
It's not going anywhere. So what's a product maybe in the last week or 2 weeks that's kind of got your attention or really – or surprised you in a good way? We'll talk about the bad ones.
I haven't really done any type of testing lately of any products. You know, and I'll test retail products. As a pro detailer, I'm not afraid to walk into Walmart, AutoZone, and just try some of these things. And I've been surprised. Some of them have been very, very good. From a professional line, from a professional point of view, I just recently tried McGee's 37. Their what do they call it? The Hydro Blue. Their silica spray sealant.
Okay. Yep.
So you spray it on the car when it's wet, kind of like CarPro Hydro Light or Hydro 2, water activated. Phenomenal product, worked really, really, really well, and it's priced right. That's great. That's awesome. So that really outside, one of the other things on my channel, I talk about Super Clean a lot because I'm a huge Meguiar Super Degreaser fan.
Okay.
My issues with Super Degreaser was that it was very, very, it was like overwhelming to me. If you were downwind of it.
Right.
It's a little and costly. If you were using it at 4:1 and you're downwind of it trying to clean a wheel well and a tire and it got you, I have sat in people's driveways hacking. And I said, there's got to be an alkaline cleaner that can do just this. I was willing to find something that may not have been just. It could have been slightly worse than it.
Right.
But I needed to get away from this. So I found Super Clean. I've been walking past this stuff in Walmart for years, going, "Who in the world would buy this crap?"
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what,
it's a great diluted
4:1. I use it on tires. I use it on in the interior.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not hacking, coughing my brains out. It's phenomenal. It works for me.
Love it. I like that product too. What are some bad products that you found, that you've been disappointed in, how about this? What are some that you've made a video about and gotten the most gripe about?
If you follow my channel, you probably will realize one thing. I'm not a fan of pH neutral car soaps.
Okay.
My gripe with pH neutral car soaps is the surfactants within them are too mild to be able to remove traffic film off the vehicle. There's all this talk about using a pH neutral soap all at the sake of protecting the wax and sealant that's on the car. Well, here we are in 2018. I really feel that those who choose to use pH-neutral soaps exclusively may not be seeing the bigger picture. If you live in an area where there's a lot of rain and you're driving through the streets that are wet and you're hitting puddles and cars are splashing all sorts of good, nasty stuff on your car,
mm-hmm.
I find a lot of these soaps, these pH-neutral soaps, just fail as far as removing traffic film. So I would say as a whole, my main philosophy when it comes to auto detailing and I'm taking care of somebody's car, it's kind of like a doctor has an oath. They all have it. There's like an industry standard. I will do no harm. I will provide the best care. For me, when I looked at auto detailing and I saw, the massive amount of competition around me, I said, how can I be different?
Mm-hmm.
What I decided to do was to make sure I provide to the highest the highest probability of making sure the car was absolutely clean as I could get it.
Mm-hmm.
The clear coat was absolutely virgin, no residue from any polymer soaps or anything like that before I laid a wax or a sealant on the vehicle. So for me, that's really my critical stand, is that my standard is when I walk up to a car, whether it's the first time I'm touching it or it's a car that I see every 30 days, my objective is how do I give my car, my client, the cleanest car on the planet and always well protected, no matter how often I see this thing.
I've actually heard a pretty good argument about car soaps in general stripping the wax that's on the car.
Right.
And so that's why I've kind of had this philosophy that I like spray waxes and spray sealants and stuff like that because they're easier to use. So I feel like whether you're a professional or a consumer, you'll use them more often so that then you'll have a better protected car if that actually is true. So I don't know if that's true, but yeah, interesting. Okay. But I could see that like people, I see that argument, like let's get more pH neutral, but then it just doesn't work. You know, so then there's that balance. I mean, like, what's the point of washing the car if it's not going to clean it?
Well, here's the deal, and I know you can talk about this as well, is that I've used pH neutral soaps. Maybe it's the first time I'm seeing this client's car, and it's maintained relatively well. They take it to the car wash every once in a while, but life is busy. By the time I get there and look at this thing, it's dirty.
Right.
I'll clean it with, you know, just pick a pH neutral soap you like. I don't care which one it is. I'll wash the car. I'm, of course, going to clay the vehicle afterwards. And what I started to notice was not only was my clay bar pulling up bonded contaminants, I can see that actually wedged within the clay bar, but my clay bar was turning black. Mm. And I'm rubbing the clay bar through bonded contaminants and realizing I just washed this car, but mm-hmm. what's all over my clay bar is traffic film.
Right. Which brings in a good argument. Does a clay bar scratch the surface? Maybe not. Maybe it's the dirt that's still on the car from not being cleaned well enough.
Oh, well, I'm crazy. I'll wash somebody's car with a non-pH soap. I will then use a body solvent, a paint prep, then go in and clay. The philosophy behind that is I want the clay bar to go after bonded metals, really. If I can remove as many of the contaminants off that paint without having to be abrasive at all, I find that I'm claying less. I'm only claying in certain areas, and I'm not claying as long on the panel, which is going to minimize the scratching. Are there some extra steps to it? Yes, but I think they work in my world because my clients look at me and go, he gives me the highest rate or the maximum chance of success throughout the process.
Right. Where do you see kind of the, or where would you, is there any like products that don't exist on the market that you would like to see in the market? Or where do you, that and, or where do you see kind of the future of this detailing industry going? Especially with all this YouTube stuff, the feedback that you're getting from listeners and all that.
Well, time is always an issue, right? How do we get this process done in a quicker amount of time? We're all busy. We're all trying to figure out what's the best way to wash our car. Because there's people who love it. They'll spend a Sunday afternoon doing it and they don't care. It takes 6 hours. Then there's some people that are like, man, I just want to get this thing over with and I want to have a clean car. For me, I love where technology is going with overall protection, if you want to call that. If you want hydrophobic paint, you want to buy yourself some time with any type of bird droppings or water spots. You want a sealant or a wax that gives you self-cleaning ability for the future when you go to clean it the next time, makes it a little bit easier to clean it. I think the future, I did a teaching seminar about 2 weeks ago here in Dallas, and we were talking about rinseless washing, but the guy I did the seminar for is huge into coatings. I don't do a lot of coatings because I'm mobile. I'm not in a controlled environment. It's 105 degrees in the summer. It's just not really the best thing for me to do unless I can get the car in a controlled environment. But we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, Jimbo, is that you have these spray-on sealants, the silica-based, water-activated, cool. But what's really, really, I bring up the coating thing because he remembers not too long ago, 2 or 3 years ago, he was able to get $2,500 for a coating, you know, mm-hmm. do some paint correction, put a coating on the car. Mm-hmm. Well, the market's getting saturated. A lot of the people who would necessarily go to somebody to get a coating, they can get this stuff off Amazon, try to figure out how to do it themselves. He's watched the numbers like cut in half over the last 2 or 3 years.
Yep.
And the beauty of it, he looks at me and he goes, and I agreed with him, he goes, the maintenance sealants you have to put on these coatings are phenomenal. They're phenomenal out of the box as standalone products.
100%.
And I looked at him, and I said, "You're right. It's so easy. Anybody can do it. I can do it. You can do it. Your customer can do it. Wipe it on like a spray wax. They'll probably get 6 to 8 months worth of hydrophobic ability, self-cleaning ability, depending on where the car is used. But those type of products that have advanced technology, but it's relatively fast and easy to put it on the paint." Boy, two thumbs up to things like that. I'm all for it.
Me too. I just did a video because I'm in podcast too because I'm trying to get better at my videos. But I did the hottest. I thought what the hottest product for 2018 was going to be a coating maintenance products. You know, in general, because I agree with you. In fact, I was just telling my wife, I do a little bit of coatings, maybe one or two a month, because I have a small garage I can work out of. But I agree. I just sold a $2,000 coating. And then the more I talk to other guys, I'm like, that probably would have been a $4,000 coating maybe a year or two ago. And what's funny is this is what was getting talked about on my show and then across other show across other platforms and stuff among detailers of like, is this sustainable? And I would always say, no, man, this is crazy. People are not, this is not sustainable. People are not going to pay this much, that much money for a car coating for very long because, and coating companies tried to, you know, give special coverage areas so they wouldn't saturate the market. And then I don't think anyone saw that just everyone was going to start a coating company. So it didn't matter how limited you made your, you know, X coating, Y company would come along and put 50 installers in your area. So it got saturated that way. But I agree with you. The maintenance is where it's at. And maintenance detailing, not fleet washing, but maintenance detailing for me is some of my favorite kind of detailing. I don't know how you feel on that, but it's way less stress than a correction and coating job. You know, the money's not, the ticket isn't as high, but the hours aren't as high either. You know, I like the 3 to 4 hour in a driveway, or 2 hours if you can pull that off. You know, 2 to 4 hours in a driveway, few hundred bucks, you know, on to the next. That's my style.
No, I agree. And I do have a lot of customers that let me maintain their vehicles. And some of my clients don't even use their vehicles. I can see them every 30 days. I'll walk into a warehouse where they're stored and go, this thing hasn't even been moved. Also, it's got its light dust on it, but they still want it maintained. And let's be honest, that's the beauty of those people who have a tremendous amount of disposable income.
Right.
They want to keep the value of the car up. It's important to them, and they never want them to get dirty. I think that sometimes when I bring the camera with me on jobs, I'll get comments down below. This guy's not a detailer. He only details clean cars. And in my head, I'm going, I understand your perspective. I get it all. But guess what? I'm pretty darn smart to be working on clean cars. And that's the only thing I want to do.
You're like, oh, damn it, I've been doing it 27 years. I deserve to be working on clean cars.
Yeah, forget this. You want to resurrect the dead. You want to see one customer, never see them again. You're in the driveway for 8 hours. Knock yourself out. I honor you. I love you. Go do it.
Right. Exactly. Is there anything that you wanted to kind of cover, get out there, talk about that we haven't covered yet?
No, I think we did a great job. I think we talked about the, you know, where's the industry going? You know, my biggest concern is, there's this, can you wash, clay, and seal a vehicle within 20 minutes? It can be done, Jimbo, and I get it. I understand it. But here's the deal. There are so many guys in the trenches who are trying to make an honest living. Mm-hmm. The more the public is aware that a car can be washed, clayed, and sealed in under 20 minutes, it devalues the pro detail that's trying to make a living. They go to somebody's home and go, listen, I washed the car this way. It's going to take 2 hours to do it because I'm going to wash it. I'm going to remove all the traffic film. I'm going to make sure the clear coat's absolutely virgin before I apply a wax or a sealant so it can truly bond to the paint. Some of these philosophies, I get it. I understand it. There's nothing better than me being able to knock all these little things out of the scenario as fast as I can. I see a lot of holes in this philosophy. I see a lot of there's times where we're cross-contaminating products within that process. Yes, the car will look great when you're done, but I noticed that when we take this path, is, you know, I've actually had customers say to me, well, how long are you going to be here working on my car? well, you got a four-door, it's a Bentley, it's whatever it is. I'm going to be there for 5 or 6 hours. Okay, but these people who wash cars, you know, clay them and seal them, they're done in 20 minutes. You don't do that. And I go, no, I don't. I actually split those processes up to give us the maximum potential, the maximum, you know, benefit of each one of those products. And what I have found, Jimbo, when I look at a car and I take those necessary steps, I literally stand back. The car looks shinier. It looks glossier. I have clients who've said to me, I've used other pro detailers, loved them. They were great. They worked on my car for a couple of years. I come across you. You work on my car. And I literally look at my car outside my kitchen window and go, why does it look cleaner?
Interesting.
And to me, and I can see it. I can feel it when I'm there working on the vehicle. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of things within professional detailing. These videos on YouTube are great. There's a lot of companies, a lot of marketing companies talking about how all these steps can be done in such a short period of time that, you know, there's guys out there, Jimbo, they can't get a customer to give them $50 to wash their car.
Right.
And I sit there and I go, wait a minute, we're going the wrong direction. We as an industry, we as pros need to rise up and go, you know what? We provide maximum cleanliness. We provide maximum decontamination of the paint. And before we even lay a wax and sealant, that sealant or wax is going to have the best chance to bond to that paint. I would love to see the industry have some set standard where we are so above all of these shortcuts. We're certainly providing a better product than a car wash service, or if you pull up to the local Boy Scout deal and they wash your car with dirty mitts for $5. I really feel we need to stand out in the industry, and we shouldn't be looking at people going, oh, we can do this and it only takes 20 minutes. To me, it boils my blood.
You know what's interesting is I actually have how complicated answers can get when people put up questions on YouTube and stuff. I actually have the opposite problem out here, is that people want me to take too much time to do their car. So if I do a car in 2 or 3 hours, they think it should have taken me 2 days. You know, so I'm actually having to overcome this barrier of like, no, I could be, maybe it's not 20 minutes, but, you know, I could be efficient, effective, and deliver on a great result in a few hours, you know, when they think it should take, you know, 8 hours or 12 hours or 10 hours or whatever. And so that's what I agree with your statement. And I just thought, man, that's such an interesting parallel, but also difference, you know, depending on where you live. But I agree with you. I think anything that dumbs down our profession is working against what a lot of people are striving for, you know, to make an honest living and stuff like that. And I think it comes down to understanding your client too. What does your client want? And you know, that's what I always tell guys when it comes to the business side. It's like, figure out what kind of client you want, and then figure out what that client wants in a detailer, and then go after that, right? If you want someone that wants their car done in 20 minutes, probably not your guy, you know? And anyway. I could stand on that.
No, I agree with you. Your customer's perspective too. There's a lot of so-called new technology with rinseless washing. You're not going to bust out a hose. I think the professional detailer has to be a little concerned sometimes, because you have to remember something. The buying public, the people who own. If I grab 10 people, 10 of my clients, and say, are 10 people just walking randomly through Walmart? Have you ever heard of rinseless washing? Nope, have no idea what it is. Now, if they hired you and you come to their home, they see you put a bucket on the ground, you pull out the big red sponge or whatever you want to do, that customer may be sitting in the house going, what in the world are they doing?
Right. Happened to me, actually. And I'm a huge fan of rinseless washing. I've done it predominantly for the past 2-3 years, but it actually happened to me where I had an old client, and I did a podcast episode on it. That exact scenario happened, to where he had a black car. It was already beat up as it is. He just wanted to wash and wax.
Right.
You know, actually, the funny part was it had buffer-induced swirl marks in it. And I was using this spray wax that has a little bit of fillers in it, and it was filling up the swirl mark. So I was like, oh wow, I'm really making this car look better, you know? But because, just like the scenario you said, I had one bucket, the big red sponge, doing my thing, he didn't like it. And I ended up not finishing the job and walking away because he didn't get it. It wasn't how he grew up washing cars, how he thought washing cars should be done, you know?
And your mentality was the car's already trashed. How would he know between any micro marring that I would do versus 100%. The stuff that's already on the paint or what's coming? I mean, I have customers that let me maintain their vehicles every 30 days, and they're $600,000 Bentleys. I look at the paint and go, Mr. Jones, this paint swirled up, because when I'm not here during that 30-day period, where do you take your car?
Right.
Car wash, Scott. And that's not going to change. I don't care about the swirls. I love your service. Just do what you do. And that's right. It. You know,
and that's a whole skill set in and of itself when you're talking about running a business, right? Of being able to communicate that to your customer, letting them know about the options, letting them know about everything, and then, you know, being like, fine, I'll still collect your money. And if you just want a shiny car, I'm still your guy as long as you pay my rate for that.
Yes, absolutely.
I love it. Cool, Scott. Well, people want to find your YouTube channel. How can they do that if they want to connect with you? If they happen to live in the Dallas area and want to connect with you or have their car done by you, how can they do that?
You know, I never tell people to subscribe. Give me a thumbs up. I just let it kind of stand on its own. But if they look up Dallas Paint Correction and Auto Detailing on YouTube, they'll find me. I'll ask for forgiveness right away. There are moments where I ramble. There's so much stuff in my head. I don't script anything. I don't edit anything. But I promise you, the intentions are pure. The transparency is there. And if they want to find it, it's Dallas Paint Correction and Auto Detailing under any YouTube search.